Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Matt Scalisi, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Ben, for the 17th time, you and I have now seen a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie.
Yeah, for the first time. It's probably more like for the 91st time overall for you.
That's true. I was just counting debuts. But
yeah, right. That is true. That's a fact.
So, you have now seen Thor Ragnarok. I saw it on Thursday night because I'm a person with very little in my life that gives me true joy. It's basically down to my kids and my wife and Marvel Cinematic Universe movies and maybe spaghetti if it's good.
Well, it does fit the stereotype, Matt. And I was about to say, you do have kids, so I don't know where this is going.
I led with that, okay? Yeah. I have to say, and, you know, Ben, it's funny because I asked you if you wanted to podcast about this movie, and you're a little hesitant sometimes to podcast about MCU movies with me because I think somewhat it's because you're worried that you're going to, like, ruin my good time. But I do have to say going into this, I'm fully aware that I'm not entirely objective or really objective at all about these movies. I love them on a sort of like automatic level. But I can say that as we get into discussing this movie, there are things that I can admit don't work in all of these movies. And there are things that I'll be critical of, but they really almost never prevent me from enjoying the movie. So that's just kind of my baseline going into these things.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, we all have those things. And yeah, you and our FNU partner, Ben Stark, typically review these Marvel movies. You know, I have y'all's little Marvel fangirling gabfests, and I don't want to necessarily, you know, hoard in on that by saying more like Ragnar suck or like more like Dragnarok, more like Ragnarok. I don't think that would make anybody very happy.
No, none of those puns would make any of us happy.
But, yeah, I love Marvel movies, too. Maybe not as much as you, because I choose to be objective when watching most movies, including the Marvel movies. There are just little things that kind of bug me about some of them, but for the most part, they're a blast. And, you know, what's interesting about Ragnarok is going into, God, like you said, the 17th Marvel movie, is there's been a lot of hype around this one, a lot of buzz going in, and I think that we can kind of safely say that among the standalones, in terms of these movies that focus on a single character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that's not an Avengers movie, the Thor movies are probably consensus the weakest of the bunch, wouldn't you say?
Oh, for sure. I think that they were really never able to make Thor as cool of a standalone character as they did with Iron Man and with Captain America, which kind of became franchises that went well beyond their movies. They're characters that you see people, you know, kind of building their own little fashion sense and lifestyle around wearing Iron Man and Captain America stuff. And I don't think it ever happened with Thor in the same way out of the major Avengers characters. And I think that a big part of that is they didn't really know what approach to take with Thor until what's funny is they didn't get it right in the second movie either, really, although I think it was closer. But I think Joss Whedon kind of showed the way, you know, in that what he figured out is, even though this is supposed to be the big powerful guy, he really is one of your strongest, if not your strongest overall comedic character out of this cast. And, you know, why it took them so long to decide to finally just hire a comedic director to do a Thor movie, I don't know. It's one of the few things that I think Marvel didn't sort of catch on to early. But I really feel like this was the right call. I think leaning into comedy was the way to go for a Thor movie.
You mean hiring a hyper-serious Shakespearean historian like Kenneth Branagh wasn't the way to go? The first time around, when you know, let's pair Kenneth Branagh with Kat Jennings' Facebook jokes.
Listen, like, I was actually rewatching the first two Thor movies in the week leading up to this, and I watched some of the extra features on the DVDs that I had never watched before, and it's really amazing to watch these like behind the scenes shots of Kenneth Branagh, sort of like walking around the set, and he's getting super serious into it, and he's going. And, you know, this is your son, your only son. You've invested your kingdom's future in this boy.
Yeah.
So anyway, now you smash this blue elf in the face with a hammer.
Yeah, and Anthony Hopkins is like, the fuck am I doing here?
Anthony Hopkins actually says in one of them, too, he's like, you know, I was considering quitting acting, and then they offered me this.
Yeah, I bet it was enticing to say the least, with the number at the bottom of the contract.
Yeah, I
guess I don't blame them. And look, to Kenneth Branagh's credit, I think Shakespeare wrote some comedies too. So, you know, he has enough of a grasp on it. But, you know, it's interesting, Matt, in terms of like the groundwork you were talking about when it came to what they had with Chris Hemsworth and his character Thor, and what's interesting is like this the first two movies, which are fine, and you know I actually like The Dark World more than I think a lot of fans out there. It, for whatever reason, maybe my expectations were low going in, and that you know served it. But I thought it was okay and fun, and certainly had its moments. And the thing about the Thor franchise and Marvel as a whole is Chris Hemsworth, outside of probably Robert Downey Jr., is arguably the biggest star in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And while Chris Hemsworth's movies outside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe haven't necessarily caught fire, his stardom hasn't waned. So in spite of his box office failures, Chris Hemsworth is still Chris Hemsworth, and his work and his celebrity sort of rages on, and that, you know, serves Marvel and sort of the greater good within what they're trying to do, and it seems to be coming to a head here with Ragnarok, because again, like, whether it's the director, whether it's just sort of the natural progression of where the MCU has been trending in terms of its leaning on comedy, but it's been doing that really ever since Iron Man, but maybe even more so thanks to the works of James Gunn and maybe the influence that he and obviously Joss Whedon has had on the franchise. Thor seemed to be moving directly in that same direction as those movies, and I think that's probably a really positive step for it to take, because Chris Hemsworth, on top of being this great-looking, muscular guy who's a natural fit to play Thor, he is also pretty charismatic, and so he's a guy who can obviously deliver a great line, whether it's written by Joss Whedon or whomever, and I think the fact that they just went really all out with the comedy this time, and the action is also fine and good enough, and we can get into specific player what we liked and didn't like about it. But I think the real treasure here is that Chris Hemsworth can kind of do it all. And so it seems like it clicked to an extent with Ragnarok, but as we wrestling fans here on FMU sometimes like to point out, I think that Marvel and this movie in particular are kind of marks for themselves, and we can get into specifics about why that might be, but, you know, maybe Marvel's enjoying reading the headlines and everything that people like you and Ben Stark are saying about it, but what do you think of that concept, Matt, that Marvel might seem a little in love with itself and can kind of get away with murder? Not necessarily that it's doing much murdering in this movie, but it's coming a little close.
It definitely is more reliant on the other MCU movies than I expected it to be. For when you first hear the pitch for this movie and what the concept is, I thought, boy, this is they're really going out on a limb making this a standalone thing. You know, they're really doing something different. And there are definitely, just from the story of this movie itself, it doesn't depend too much on needing to know much about the other ones. But I think the setup of it, the way that you get to where this movie kind of takes off from, you got to know a lot. I mean, you have to have seen Age of Ultron for without question. I think that's just kind of assumed in the setup to this movie. But you know, Ben, the other thing that I think you kind of have to know going in is, even though this movie is such a different tone than the first two Thor movies, you really do need to know. There's a pretty intricate setup from the end of the last Thor movie to the start of this one. And in fact, there's a really great joke that to me was like probably the comedic highlight of this movie, that I don't even know if it plays if you don't pretty accurately remember the ending of The Dark World. And I'm really curious to see, my wife is going to go see it later this week. She's not going to rewatch Thor The Dark World before she goes and see this. I'm really curious to see how that stuff plays out to her. Because the sort of, I guess in a way it serves as a recap in that they're reenacting the end of The Dark World. But everything happening there and the situation around it, if you're aware of who everybody actually is in that moment, to me, it was one of the biggest laughs in the movie, and it was a great moment. But again, I am one of those people that you would describe as being a mark for this stuff, and I think that element of it, and I think the stuff involving the Hulk, it definitely requires you to be bought in to the MCU. This is not a movie that is particularly going out of its way to accommodate people who are casual fans of this stuff, to me. That's how it feels to me as a hardcore fan. But I'd kind of be curious to know what a hardcore, or what a less well-versed fan thought of it. Whether they came away.
I forgot your kids are with you. I'm sorry, man.
Sorry, I'm on headphones. But I think I'd be curious to know what a fan might say when they, if there are people who would see this and say, you know, I didn't really get everything they were talking about, but I kind of don't care because it didn't really matter to what was going on in this movie. Do you need to know the stuff about the Hulk and the Black Widow? Is that just adding a little bit of depth to that moment? Or does it actually impact what's going on in this movie? I don't really think it does. I think it's more of a nod to the other movies. But certainly, it's more important, I think, that you understand the Thor-Loki relationship. And I thought it was handled well. I think that the evolution of that, going from Loki being a full-on heel in Avengers and to certain parts of the first Thor movie, too, to where it got a little bit more. That's one of the things I like about The Dark World, actually, is there's more complexity in that relationship. And the Thor-Loki dynamic actually becomes something fun to watch and has a little bit of a love-hate thing happening. To me, this took that to the next level, and I really enjoyed a lot of their scenes together. So I think that this is definitely the third movie in a franchise. You know, there's a certain amount of knowledge of the characters that you have to expect if you're going into a sequel of a sequel. But I don't think, I want to say that this movie isn't as wrapped up in the MCU stuff as it might appear to be to me as a hardcore fan.
Yeah, you mentioned the Loki thing, and you're right. There's a part where Mark Ruffalo obviously wakes up as Bruce Banner, and he sees Loki, and he's like, the last time I saw you, you were killing everybody, you're trying to kill everybody. Where are you at now? And he's like, that changes from, you know, 1 hour to the next or something like that. And so, yeah, you're right. I do enjoy that sort of dynamic and the complexity of the Loki character, where it's like you don't know whether you're getting good or bad, and he switches so often in all these movies. And that's really fun. But and you also said before, like, people really need to buy into the Marvel Cinematic Universe to enjoy this. I think it's safe to say people are pretty bought in.
Yes, at this point. That's fair.
You know, billions of dollars later. But no, I do. You know, and I think that I would just be kind of nitpicking if I said, yeah, this movie suffers because of how much it depends on past movies and future movies, for that matter. You could say the same thing for most MCU movies, to be honest. But you're right. I mean, there's the Black Widow reference. There is one Loki Hulk joke that they go back to over and over and over during this big fight sequence that references their encounter in the first Avengers movie, where it's just like, okay, yeah, got it. All
right. Right. And it got a big pop with the Thursday night crowd, I can tell
right,
you that.
Right, sure. And, yeah, it's fun. Yeah. But if you had zero context for it, you'd be like, huh? But
yeah.
Everybody has context for that moment. Like, almost literally, everybody saw it. So they're
right.
Pretty confident. You know, when I say, like, mark for themselves, you know, when I saw the first trailer for this, it was certainly a fun trailer. And it obviously introduced and established this new tone for the Thor franchise and perhaps for Marvel moving forward. Even though, again, I think it took a little influence from Guardians of the Galaxy in terms of incorporating a rock soundtrack.
Definitely.
Playing the Immigrant song, obviously, and what was a fun sizzle reel of a trailer. But in here, they used the song twice pretty effectively. And
the second one, by the way, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to the action, but the second use of that song, to me, is one of the most fun action freeze frame kind of moments that I've seen in a Marvel movie in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's some good action, but in terms of, like, it going hardcore comedy, like, there was one moment in this movie where I felt like, am I watching a Judd Apatow movie? And it was when you mentioned the part earlier when they're doing this play at Asgard,
yeah.
And there are cameos in this. Look, like, during this play sequence, and I thought, wait a second,
it's
like,
a potential Nope moment. I can admit that.
Yeah.
I could see it not working at all for some people. To me, I was kind of in such disbelief. It was definitely the hardest I laughed watching the movie it was a funny scene, I think, but the biggest laugh to me mostly is because of all the people to do it, it's Matt freaking Damon, and I'm like, he did it again. Matt Damon keeps sneaking his ass into cameos in movies, and I never know he's doing it. It's like it was more funny to me because it was Matt Damon than if it had been anybody else, even somebody really famous.
Yeah, but see, at that point, I was just like, wait, guys, like, Marvel's never really needed this, you know? Like, this is just,
right.
And again, like, this movie is kind of going for different things than what we've seen in the past, but... Man, at that point, it just felt like, okay, we have everything in the world. Let's just use everything at our disposal now, including a Matt Damon cameo. You know, like, if we can't get Matt Damon to play one of the superheroes, then by God, we'll throw him in our movie just because he's visiting the set. I don't know. And who played the fake Thor? Could you tell?
Fake Thor is Chris Hemsworth's brother.
The not Luke, but the other, or Liam.
I think it's Liam Hemsworth, yeah. And,
oh,
and,
that was
Liam
Hemsworth?
I believe so, yeah. And Odin is Sam Neill.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell. I thought
yeah.
for a minute it might have been Orlando Bloom as fake Thor, but then I was like, dang, he's jacked, man. That's not Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, no, it was a Hemsworth. And
Legolas.
No.
But... Yeah, so I don't know. Like, again, it's kind of cheap to get onto it too much for that, and
it's weird.
I will
say that it's very unusual for a Marvel movie to do a celebrity cameo in the way that one plays. Like,
that is
not the usual way. I mean, usually Marvel would just, if they want a celebrity cameo, they will cast a famous person as a legitimate character in the movie. Rather than do it as kind of a gag where, like, I mean, for all I know, that's supposed to be Matt Damon, that they just, like, hired him to come to Asgard.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they could have gotten away with it in that world. But, and, you know, there's the Hasselhoff cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2 came out this year, so maybe it reflects where this franchise is kind of going, where it's like, we're going to live forever. We can get away with anything. Let's just do it because we can, and people will love it. And again, like, it's fun throwaway stuff, but, you know, like, as I was watching this movie, just to kind of focus on the story itself and the action and the characters, I did kind of find myself just kind of sitting there thinking, like, this is fun, but it's just kind of fun mumbo jumbo, you know, like, it's just, and like, this is the franchise or the character that would, you know, rely heavily on mythology and silliness and you know, this fantastic realm where, you know, they just can kind of make it up as they go along, you know, and that's fine. And again, for the most part, it's enjoyable stuff, but I don't know, for a while, like, my eyes can kind of glaze over a little bit I don't know that this is upper echelon Marvel is what I guess I'm trying to say. The touch is very light. It's a pretty movie. It's funny. There are jokes riddled throughout. The timing is great. The cast is really good and has great timing. And the director is obviously a pretty great technician when it comes to you know, filming these jokes and landing them. But as a Marvel movie, I don't think that it has the substance that maybe some of its predecessors have. Where it might have, you know, plenty of the style that they do and flashiness. I just don't know that I enjoyed it like I did some of the others.
So this is an interesting debate that's kind of been framed around this movie, Ben, and you're not the only person to say this. I think I've seen a lot of folks saying this movie's fun, it's a good time, but it doesn't have the substance. And I can't disagree with that. I think, in fact, if anything, this movie kind of runs away from substance and it kind of blows it up literally and figuratively and says this whole franchise isn't about any of this stuff anymore and we're gonna free it up to do something different. We're just going to throw it out into the middle of some nonsense and see what happens. But to me, watching it, the experience of watching it is as much fun as I've had or more at any Marvel movie. And I think what it says to me about it is that this is a movie that I think narratively is not something particularly groundbreaking or memorable or special, but the execution is what's special about it. And the tone that Taika Waititi is able to pull off in this movie. And to me, that has been not flawless in every single Marvel movie. I think some of them do struggle with what tone to take things because the story and the sort of narrative beats take priority because they have somewhere where they need the characters to get by the end of the movie. Civil War would be a good example of that to me, where I think that movie's a little bit all over the place tonally sometimes, but there are these big important things that happen during that movie. And that they need those things to be executed and pulled off, and that's what takes precedent in those movies. So to me, what's interesting here is they didn't really do much work getting the character from point A to point B. It's more like a collection of random ideas and scenes that are all incredibly fun to watch for the most part, and I think there are very few directors that could have made it that entertaining as Taika Waititi did. I think that this movie, probably more than any Marvel movie that I can immediately think of, bears the sort of signature of its director really, really clearly. And,
yeah.
You know, to me, I'm going to have a hard time when I get asked to, like, rank these movies again, because I think I would have told you before, too, that substance and what happens in it would have mattered a lot more to me. But now I came out of this just thinking, I don't know that I could have asked for a better time watching a movie, even though nothing particularly important even happened in the story.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, the only other, I guess, auteurs of the franchise whose tone really sticks out and is really, like, firmly established are probably, you know, the movies that Joss Whedon and James Gunn made, you know, and I guess to an extent Jon Favreau with his Iron Man movies. So, you know, I agree with you there, but I just don't think that there's a strong handle on theme and ideas and characters this time. I think there are flashes of it. Again, you go back
to
the Thor-Loki relationship.
They throw around some ideas with kind of refugees and that idea. That's in there, but it's
and,
not.
And like how a place is not necessarily the geography. It's the people who make it up. And, you know, like what does home really mean? And like when it comes to the dilemma of sort of sacrificing what you perceive or have perceived your whole life as being your home. I thought that the Tessa Thompson character, the Valkyrie character, was good, and she was really fun, and I liked how they sort of touched on the idea of her sort of like reclaiming her sort of purpose as a Valkyrie and her allegiance to Asgard. So there were flourishes of it that worked, but I just didn't really think that it stuck to its guns long enough for any of that to really resonate. Like, I mean, if you even refer to the Kate Blanchett character, this goddess of death. Like, first of all, I think Kate Blanchett thought that she signed up for a Joel Schumacher Batman movie.
I'm with you, man. I would call it a one of the more disappointing Marvel villain performances, and probably
and
more,
a bad Kate Blanchett performance.
Yeah, more, but that's probably what's most disappointing about it too, is that you couldn't have possibly on paper asked for better casting, and I just don't really think. I don't really think she brought it.
No. And I'll call her Knives from now on, because all she does is just, like, throw knives at people.
Yeah.
I can't really remember her name, like Hella. Or something like that. And,
you know,
I love Kate Blanchett, man. Like,
yeah,
how
me
awesome
too.
Is it that she agreed to be in a Marvel movie and to be its villain? But, yeah, I think it's a whiff on her.
Yeah. You know, what's funny, too, is, and this is something that's happened in a lot of Marvel movies. I think that they get so many threads going at once that some of the balls that are being juggled get dropped. And
yep.
I don't think hers was particularly executed well. You know, funny enough, I really like Carl Urban's performance in this movie a lot, and I like that character. But I don't think they give him a ton of meat to work with. And I think you could have built something more out of him probably if you weren't trying to juggle quite as much.
Yeah,
but he's a cool character, and
and
I like what he does.
Yeah, but I mean, they leave him and more so the Kate Blanchett character, like, for literally like part of an hour in the movie, you know,
yeah.
And like she's the big threat, you know. But then the big threat turns into, well, how do we get off of this junk planet, Sakaar or whatever? And then it's just like, wait a second, what's going on in Asgard? Isn't that important? Isn't that like what they're isn't that the whole purpose here, to get there and save that world? And it's just like, well, what's happening? And it just cuts back like every now and then. And you're right, Carl Urban's really good. And it's like, well, let's give him more screen time. Nope, no time. And then it's like, wait, now Idris Elba is here and he's doing something. Let's just make him look exactly like Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. And then let's make him be Aragorn in the Two Towers,
yeah.
Like leading all these refugees around.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just like, wait, this isn't the, so this is a Lord of the Rings movie now? So I don't know, like, but yeah, there's just, again, like, this is kind of the same old thing where it's just like too much going on in big action, big sprawling sequel action movie, you know?
There's a lot being juggled and not all of it gets handled the right way. To me, the movie is at its best for sure when they are just on Sakaar, and I think if they'd sold out more to that and not quite worried as much about what's happening. Look, I get why we have to care about Asgard ultimately, but I think that the way the movie's structured, it is set up to make Hela the ultimate threat of the movie. I think that they kind of felt like they had to keep that ball in the air. And ultimately, though, Sakaar is just such a more interesting environment. The look of it is so much more interesting. The scenario they have set up there, where there's these sort of, you know, slave champions fighting each other, is a lot more interesting. And I would rather watch Jeff Goldblum in this movie than watch Kate Blanchett doing her thing, which, you know, even though Goldblum isn't even fighting, he's not really even a bad guy. He's just Jeff. He's literally just Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
like,
I love it. And I really I like his like second in command, who is I believe an actress that was in The Hunt for the Wilder People, and she's really funny. This nasty, mean New Zealand woman who just hates everybody, and she's trying to get him to kill people constantly.
The melting stick. Why are you handing me the melting stick?
This was a very minor offense.
He just interrupted me. That was great. But I was wondering, when's Jemaine Clement going to show up? Is he hidden in there somewhere?
I didn't see him if he's in there, but I will say this. We haven't mentioned him yet, but Taika Waititi's performance as the voice of Korg, the rock guy, is really great to me. And that's the New Zealander performance that you need in the movie. Just, he basically is a Concorde. Like,
yeah,
it's just one of the guys from Flight of the Conchords plopped into the movie, just like being nice all the time and being polite and quietly trying to like help everyone and stage a revolution. And it's the little perfect New Zealander note that the movie needs, I think, that keeps it, you know, it's got that. That's kind of what makes it ultimately feel like a Taika Waititi movie to me, is that it's like a horrific Mad Max kind of hellscape, except that everyone's kind of nice.
Yeah, it is really funny. There's a great line where he's like standing over Idris Elba, and he's like, "Hey, man," he's like, "We're about to get on this spaceship and leave the planet. You want to come?" That's probably Australian. But
all of his lines. Are you laying eggs right now?
Yeah, he was really good. It's a funny character, and again, like the movie is overstuffed for sure. Like as a lot of, you know, third movies in franchises and 17th movies in franchises tend to be. But I don't know. I mean, Marvel tends to have a pretty good grasp on how to handle this stuff and how to let it gestate and how to handle, you know, its characters and dialogue and comedy. And I think, again, for the most part, it does here, but I don't know, man. Like, the tone is so light that I just didn't really feel much for this movie, even though there's a lot of moving parts that are really good. And I mean, like, how can you complain all that much when you've got the Hulk, you know, being the Hulk and doing Hulk things, even though, you know, I kind of wish I'd seen a little more Hulk. And I'm like wondering, when did Hulk start talking so much?
It's new. Do you like the treatment of Hulk in this movie more than, because I would say they definitely have changed the character. He is a different character now.
Yeah. Okay. I would be fine with it. Like 100. I'm fine with it generally, but I'd be 100% fine with it if we had had some sort of like transition or like flashback or like something that would suggest like, here's why Hulk is talking, you know, like almost like a human being now, you know, like, instead of just, because I mean, in the Avengers movies, all he does is just, he turns into the Hulk and he's enraged and he just destroys things, you know?
He does talk in Avengers, but it's very briefly.
Right. Like, it's just like one line per movie.
Yeah.
You know, at this time, he's like having conversations and he's able to calm down and he's just like, he's like a chilled out dude, you know? And I'm like, wait a second.
He's just kind of a douche.
Yeah. It's just like, and it's funny, like he and Thor have some really great scenes together and have good interplay. But again, I'm just like, wait, how did we get here? Like, where's the in between that explains why the Hulk can now suddenly hold a conversation with somebody, you know, and like enjoy the hot tub, you know, like. So yeah, I don't know. That's just, again, it's a minor quibble, but it's a quibble.
Yeah, I definitely think that if this is the tone and this is the movie, like tonally, that I got if I was walking into, you know, Infinity War expecting something epic and important and, you know, that would change the whole franchise forever, I would be disappointed. But I guess it's a weird situation because these Marvel movies now don't have to all be the event movie. And it's a unique situation that Marvel finds itself in that very few other franchises, I mean, really no other franchises can
lay claim to, which is that they can have movies come out that don't have to be the biggest thing ever. And they don't even have to pitch themselves as that. And they don't even have to try to be that. They can just be a sort of chapter along the way. Another sort of, I hate to use the word, but they can kind of be minor Marvel. They can afford to do that because of the way this thing is built out. It's now a franchise that has three movies a year, which there's never been anything even remotely like this before. It's a completely different standard being applied than you could ever use on another franchise. But to me, what it frees you up to do, and what I think is cool about it, is you can make big departures. You can take chances. And hopefully Marvel takes advantage of that. I think this is a sign that they are, that you can say, look, is this the exact movie that all of our fans have been waiting their whole lives for? Maybe not, but it's different, and it's not something they're expecting. And it's something fun and unique, and it's not going to feel like the same old thing. And the one thing I think you got to be worried about if you're Marvel is making these things feel old and retread and like we've already seen it. You don't want people walking out saying, you know, it's pretty much exactly like what I've seen in the other 16 movies before. I think you want it to stay fresh feeling, and you want to keep people feeling a little bit surprised by what they're seeing. And I think that bringing in new tones and doing different things, like hiring a comedy director and really leaning into that, that is one way to do that. And, you know, again, it's weird because it feels like I'm not judging this movie based on solely its own merits, but I think I have the freedom to do that a little bit as a fan of these movies, because it doesn't need to be. This doesn't need to be the ultimate end-all, be-all Thor movie, because I already know that there's another movie with Thor in it coming out next year, and that's probably the one where the real heavy beats come.
So let me ask you three questions before we go, Matt. First, outside of the fact that it just looks like the guy who is in red carpet photos and is on talk shows, what was the point of cutting Chris Hemsworth's hair in this movie?
I really don't know. I assume there's a behind-the-scenes purpose to it. I mean, look, if I'm gonna try to, like, make up a narrative reason for it, I would say that changing the character's look is one way to make this franchise feel like you've shaken it up and taken it in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Same thing with giving him the eye patch at the end of the movie, basically.
Okay, I mean, yeah, all right. I don't buy it, but okay.
I'm stretching. I'll admit,
yeah,
that's a stretch.
Okay,
I think probably he didn't want to wear the wig.
There you go. I think,
yeah,
that's the answer. Not going to do it. So number two, tell me which Marvel Cinematic movie you would say, like, I like this. I like Thor Ragnarok as much as I like blank in the MCU.
You know, I would probably put it, I mean, I would definitely put it below Guardians of the Galaxy and the two Avengers movies, which I pretty consistently would say are my favorites, because I agree that it doesn't have the emotional weight that those movies have. But, you know, I'd probably put this up there with Iron Man for me. I'd put it up there with Spider-Man Homecoming, which, you know, I liked a lot. I just think it's a very unique entry in this genre. We haven't talked enough in this podcast about just the visuals in this movie too, which are really, really cool and out there and different.
Okay, my third question is, how would you rank the three Marvel Cinematic Universe movies from 2017?
I would go, gosh, Ben, I wasn't prepared for this.
It's only three movies, Matt.
I know, but look. First of all, I like all three of them a lot. I would probably say Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Honestly, the more that I've watched them, I would say Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 might be third for me this year. And I would say that this would be my number two, and Spider-Man Homecoming would be my number one. That's how I feel right now. I really like all three of them, but I feel like there's as I've gone back to rewatch the other two, and I've, of course, I've only seen this movie once, Guardians was just not the stuff with Kurt Russell has not connected with me as much on the rewatches.
Okay, so my clickbait headline here is Marvel fanboy reveals he hates Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yep, definitely.
So I'm pretty shocked.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the sort of like shameless Doctor Strange section that got plugged in.
Pretty
here.
Shameless. Pretty yeah. Freaking shameless, man. Like
it didn't have any point. It didn't need to be in there at all.
They filmed that
easily pulled
the
it out.
Week before this came out. Like, they filmed it the day they premiered the movie.
I actually think they filmed it when they were making Doctor Strange, and they just stored it away and said, yeah, we'll make another Thor movie eventually. We'll throw this in there when there's time.
Every time you watch it, it's a live stream of it actually happening.
Yeah.
That is like, is that the most shoehorned in MCU, like, scene so far?
You know what? That honor goes to in the Dark World, which I saw rewatched last week. There is a scene where Loki, for no reason at all, turns into Captain America for like 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's just like let's get something in there.
Well, he owes us an appearance, Chris. We're gonna use this Chris Evans contract. Damn it.
Hey, good for Doctor Strange, though. I bet you probably liked it, though. I'm getting, like, you heard that music, and you're probably just like, yeah, okay. Okay, I'll do it.
Look, I'm not going to complain about it. I'm excited to see him actually do something in another Marvel movie, which I don't think this counts as.
Yeah, well, I guess they're all actually going to be doing something in the next super big, giant Marvel movie.
Next May. Here we go, buddy.
Well, I'm glad this could hold you over. I'm glad three Marvel movies could hold you over until the next one.
Yeah, I'll say this too. I actually think that this being Marvel's first year to have three releases in the same calendar year, they not only made movies that the fans all seem really happy about. They all made a lot of money. They were well promoted. They were all handled well. So, like, as a movie studio, and I realize they're not, like, exactly an indie operation on their own out there, but I think they clearly, the machine is in full gear at this point. They completely understand how to put out multiple movies per year, and they are essentially, in and of themselves, a huge movie studio at this point.
And we just got big news that there's going to be more different kinds of Marvel movies on the horizon, too. But we'll get to that later, right?
Yeah, probably a future podcast when that's a done deal. But there's definitely some things in the works that could be pretty big for the future of the MCU.
All right, Matt. I'm happy for you, man. Glad you talked.
Thanks, Ben. It's been great for me. It's been a great 2017.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.